You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. Ready-Made Resources is a trusted name in the prepper community because they've been around for 18 years. They offer great prices on night vision, water filtration, long-term storage food, solar energy components, and provide free technical service. Get ready for an uncertain future at ReadyMadeResources.com. Today's guest is Christian author John Theo. John, welcome back to the show.
Mark, thanks for having me back on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Big changes in your life since the last time we talked. But let's start with you've recently released two new books, Genesis and Exodus, which is the second in your mission trip series. And there's also a short story that's a, sort of a prequel to that called Clark. Can you tell us about those two books?
Sure. Mission Trip Genesis and Exodus is a sequel to my 2016 release Mission Trip. And basically, at its core, it's a futuristic retelling of the Pilgrim story. So I went through, it takes place in 2077. But in researching this book, I was asking, you know, what did it take for the Pilgrims to flee Europe? What was the type of persecution? And then I put it into a, as I was writing these books, it was during the Obama administration, and you can imagine Christian persecution went up. And so I started asking, what would it take for Christians to flee this country? Now, to date, we've mostly only had legal persecution in this country. But even today, I was reading on International Christian Concern, 80 Christians were killed in Nigeria in the past, just in the past month. So there's Christian persecution around the world is the most persecuted class on the planet. So I was asking the question, what would it take for Christians to flee and where would they go? And the answer is there's no place to go. And people think you have freedom in Canada and Ireland and England and in Australia, but you don't. They don't have the Bill of Rights over there. So the reality is we're living in the freest country on the planet. And if persecution increases here for Christians, there's really no place for them to go. So in the future, I did a hypothetical and I had them go live in an underwater city. Science fiction is notorious for, even though it takes place in the future, it's notorious for dealing with current events. And again, I was writing these mission trip novels during the past 8 years when persecution to Christians was increasing. And I mean, just to give you an example, the first interracial kiss on television happened in a sci-fi show on Star Trek in 1968. So you have these sci-fi shows and sci-fi books that can deal with current events, but they set them in a futuristic setting. So even though it's a dystopian futuristic novel, it's dealing with a lot of current events that have been happening over the past 8 to 10 years here. So.
And then,
and,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So in Clark, it's just it's a novella I put out that has to do with a character in one of the stories that is a kind of the whole crux of that story is me trying to tell a story about how a person comes dealing with PTSD, comes to know Christ. But in the same time, I'm dealing with, I grew up a total nerd reading comic books, and I'm addressing something that I see happen over and over in our culture, where I see Christian themes, Christian symbols being taken over by the secular world. So for instance, Clark is a story talking about a superhero that has permeated our culture for almost 100 years. You can imagine which superhero it is, but what people don't know is the idea for that superhero came from a story we both know about a father who sends his only begotten son to planet Earth to save mankind, and this son is near invulnerable and invincible, and that's the premise for this comic book. So in my writing, I'm kind of trying to take that back from the secular world, that storyline that's been taken over. And I do that a lot in my writing. I'll have a different take on Santa. He's more of a Christian. In a couple of my stories, he's more of a Christian warrior. And I just see the world, the secular world, taking these Christian symbols, these Christian themes from us. And at the same, and that's fine if they want to borrow it, but at the same time, they kind of kick us while they're doing it, which drives me nuts. And I just see this happening over and over in our culture where you have Christian institutions, Christian hospitals, Christian, you know, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, all these places were started as seminaries, and now they're bastions of liberalism, and it's just been taken over and taken over, and we keep giving ground and giving ground. And so that was my one of my themes with the story of Clark, but it also ties into the, again, dystopian world of Mission Trip. And feel free to interrupt me because I tend to just rattle on, Mark, as well.
I love rattling because it's very interesting for starters. And then, you know, as a host, it makes my job easy. But and then we alluded to some big changes in your life. You were previously a professor at a liberal university. If you want to tell us which one, that's fine. If not, you don't have to. You decided to unplug from that, and you have really, you know, the pendulum's really, really swung in your life. I don't know if you were already homeschooling then when you were actually still involved and you're still, you know, part of the matrix back then, but you took the red pill, you got out, you're living a much more self-reliant life, you're homeschooling, you started your own business, you're an entrepreneur now, as opposed to, you know, being a cog in this machine that is grinding America into soot, basically.
Yeah.
So talk to us about that whole process. Talk to us about your awakening, and feel free to ramble and tell us about what was the catalyst when you said, that's it. I can't be a part of this corrupt Babylonian system. And I think, you know, it's Revelation 18 where God says, you know, come out from among her and don't take any more part in her sins, because if you keep being a part of this wicked system, you're going to get to share in the plagues that are poured on her. And I know that that's, you know, for the most part, for the tribulation, but in some sense, that's for us. And if, you know, for the people that are living around, that part of California that's so responsible for so much of the wickedness that's coming out of the entertainment industry right now. You know, I'm not saying that the floods and the fires and the people being swept away and the mudslides and everything, I'm not saying that's all God's wrath, but my goodness, the people that were living around that were living at the gates of Sodom, that were so involved in Babylon and that Babylonian system right there, have shared in all of that really apocalyptic stuff that's happened there, haven't they?
Yeah, it's really sad. We were up in Massachusetts. I was born and raised up there. My heart is always going to be in Boston and Massachusetts, but it's just changed a lot over the last couple decades. And, you know, my wife and I were both on the gerbil wheel in the matrix working like crazy. And 10 years ago, you could have dual incomes up there. And you could get ahead. Today, a lot of times, at least where we were on the coast, you'd have two incomes just to survive. I mean, we had two incomes, and we owned a multifamily with rent coming in, and we had no credit card debt, and we were still just getting by. And we were very frugal. I mean, we had school loans, but other than that, we were just getting by. And on top of that, we weren't seeing our children. So we were barely seeing our children and spending time together as a family. So we had been homeschooling for a while. You can imagine, we're Christian, devout Christians, homeschoolers, conservative, libertarian. You know, we fit in up there like, you know, we didn't anymore. And a lot of people we know were either moving away or passing away. And the thing that really did it for me is one of my best friends passed away at 43. He was the healthiest guy I knew. And I worked for him for 14 years as an executive at a property management firm while I was teaching as well. And he kind of working for a buddy when it works, it's a great thing. And it just made me kind of lulled me into a sleep, you know, and I had a little nice little world up there where I worked for people I liked and I liked my job. But then he passed away and I left that and I went and worked full time at academia. And it was not for me. And I liked teaching. I was a teacher and I was also in operations as well. But I didn't fit in up there anymore. And like I said, everyone I know was moving away or passing away. And we just prayerfully for a couple of years consider, you know, where can we go? Where can we go? Where can we go? And we kept coming back to this area in Virginia and we didn't have any money. And God just performed miracle after miracle to get us down here. I mean, we had no money, but somehow we were able to buy a small business down here. And based on selling our house, which is unheard of in the business world, but he took the offer contingent on selling our house. We sold our house in one day. And we were within like, you know, $15,000 of closing the deal on this business. And I'm just saying this because I have to show how God has been faithful. And my friend, I'm like, I drew a line in the sand that $15,000 is too much. My friend was like, listen, God can make that up. You need to take a step of faith. So we took a step of faith and we sold our house for $18,000 over asking price. And so God made that up. And then as we're leaving Massachusetts, my wife's boss calls her at the last minute. My wife's a lawyer. And said, can you telecommute? I really could use you. You're such a good employee. Do you mind telecommuting? And that was an answer to prayer because that's been a supplemental income that's been huge for us down here as we're ramping up our business. And then as we come down here, we started our company. We put it under a LLC, Limited Liability Corporation. And I named it after my daughter's favorite psalm, Psalm 23:1, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And so it's PS231 is our parent company. And so we went and filed the paperwork with the bank, and we walk out of the bank. And, Mark, I'm not kidding you. I literally saw on a billboard right outside the bank the day we closed the business a Bible quote. And guess what psalm it was? Psalm 23:1, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And just I've had so many miracles happen that have been like that since we've been down here. So it's just been an absolute blessing. And it's funny because the business I own now is it's a self-storage business, and I do U-Hauls on the side and some other businesses as well. And it's so not glamorous, and I'm so happy. I get to take my daughter, my oldest daughter, with me to work a couple days a week and spend quality time with her. We're together as a family more. We are it's so not glamorous, and I'm so happy. That's the only way I can say. And it's allowed me more time to write, obviously, as well. So there's just been a lot of miracles that have happened to get us down here.
That's absolutely fantastic. What curriculum are you using for homeschool?
You had to ask me that. It's a biblical curriculum. And if you said it, I would remember. It's like a one word.
Rebecca?
It's a biblical curriculum. I think that's it. I'm pretty sure that's it. And it's working out really well. I mean, my buddy who had passed away, he was a very successful guy and multi-millionaire. And he used to come in my office, and he wasn't like picking on me. He said this as a compliment. He's like, I don't get it. I'm spending $30,000 a year for my daughter to go to a private school, and your daughter is in the same level as her, and she's homeschooled. And he's like, what am I doing? And it was the funny thing. So this curriculum is great. It's really good. And it's just great. I can spend – I grew up – I didn't see my father that much. He worked three jobs to put food on the table in my house. And my mom used to take us to work to see him at night when he was a security guard. And I don't want that for my children. I want my children to grow up and be like, it's sick of seeing me. I want it the other way. I wanted to spend as much time with them as possible. So that's part of the reason why we came down here.
Was there ever a time that you guys didn't homeschool? Did you ever – have your kids in the public school system or private?
I'll tell you, we lived in an area of Massachusetts that had some of the best school systems around, and we never put our child into school. And the reason is I still thought it was horrible. So my sister, who has a child older than ours, pulled her daughter out of the public school system because they were teaching them about they were pushing Obama's agenda on the kids, making them watch Obama speeches and all sorts of that whole indoctrination was trickling down to the school systems. And she just didn't want any part of it. And again, it was considered some of the best schooling in Massachusetts, and we just didn't even participate. It's just not what I want for my children. I want them to actually think, and I want them to hear both sides of everything from the creation evolution to, and I want them to have the Bible as part of their curriculum as well. So, no, we never put them in. And, from what I see in the public school system around the country, I mean, if people have the ability to, I would highly, highly recommend getting your kids out. But a lot of people don't have the option. And I just feel very blessed that we've sacrificed a lot to do this, but it's well worth it.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPRECON for 5% off your order at CampingSurvival.com. Trading Post in the Woods is ran by veteran crisis responders who know how important it is to be prepared. They specialize in comprehensive natural survival remedy kits, preparedness and homesteading supplies, as well as skills training. Visit them online today at TradingPostInTheWoods.com. You and most of the listeners know that we just had our first child. Of course, we've been looking a lot into this. And from what I hear, most people that have their kids in the public education system are putting almost as much time into it as homeschoolers, because even if you're not bothering with the deprogramming and, you know, dispelling all the lies that they've heard at school all day, which you're not even going to hear it because a lot of it's so subtle. It's just like the entertainment industry. You really got to dig to find it, because it's buried under a lot of stuff. It's like, you know, you got a sandwich with some, organic bread and some farm fresh cheese and, fresh meat and all of that stuff, and there's just a little bit of arsenic in there in between the lettuce and the pickle, and you got to dig to find it, but that arsenic's enough to kill you, and especially spiritually, when you're told everything happened by itself, you're told that there's no God. They're not saying there's no God, but if everything happened by itself, then obviously you don't need a creator, you don't need a God for that. And so obviously there's no God, because if there had been a God, he would have made it, and so it wouldn't have happened by itself. And you don't have to get into all those details, because they're just sort of known. So and that's enough arsenic to kill you. We had one of our guests recently, Bob Griswold, said that 90% of kids, and I've heard statistics similar to this. I hadn't heard this particular statistic, but he said 90% of church-going children that graduate from a public school will fall away from the church. And that's frightening, and that's arsenic right there. So, like you said, I think if there's any way for people to get their kids out of that system, whether you have to homeschool or a Christian school, which, you know, even in Christian school, there's a lot of people that are in there because they're kids. They just want their kids to go to private school. They don't want them in the public school. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that they ascribe to any of the beliefs, much less all of the beliefs of that school. And nobody's a better teacher for your kids than you. But it is a better alternative, I think, than the public school system. But
I'm shocked at how many Christians are still kind of asleep to this whole culture war that's going on, and they'll send their kids off to some of the biggest party schools out there because they have a good engineering program. But what's the point if they're going to be pulled away from the church? I don't want my kids going to any place but a Christian institution if they go to college. Hopefully they will. But I don't want them going to some party school or some secular school that's just going to whittle away at their faith, but when they graduate, they'll have a better chance of getting an accounting job. I don't get it. And coming back to education, I have a funny anecdote. My wife and I both lived in an area, a coastal area, north of Boston, when we were both engaged, and she had an apartment a couple blocks from me, and it was pinched. This area is hyper liberal, and it was pinched right between two colleges out in this urban area, out in this rural area. And you had one side, it was a huge party school, secular college, and the other one was a Christian college. And guess, Mark, where all these wealthy liberal people pulled their nannies from? Guess which college they pulled their nannies from? The Christian college or the secular college?
The Christian college.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They know it. They know what they're doing.
Yeah. Isn't that hilarious?
They know that they wouldn't trust their kid with anybody like them.
Yeah, and these colleges were like literally each a mile to the east and a mile to the west from this community, and so it was like equidistant. And the same size colleges, same type of like. It's just it was amazing to me, you know. And the hyper liberal people out there, they all want the best for their kids. They all want the kids with the moral background. so funny to me, the hypocrisy.
In Genesis and Exodus, you talk about games, online video games, and social media that are basically used to hurt humans like cattle and to you know extract all of their data. And and of course we know that me being a self-published author, I know all about all the targeting that can be done to target ads on Facebook. So that means that all those users, they have all that information, but I can, you know, I can target people that are conservatives or showed interest in this political event or that one, or people that watch people that like maybe the Jim Baker show, because they've got a lot of, you know, not that I'm such a big Jim Baker fan, but he does have some guests on there that nobody else will give a platform to. Tim LaHaye, or, you know, and you could use this to really get very, very specific to find people that might be a threat to a liberal government. So this is all information that people are building their own dossier against them in real time. Yeah. But you touch on this in Genesis and Exodus. And I'm going to let you speak about it from the book's aspect, but real quick before I turn it over to you, Sean Parker, who was one of the executives at Facebook, and then Chamath, I'm going to butcher his last name, and I probably already butchered his first name, but Chamath Palihapitiya, I think, something like that. Chamath, we'll call him Chamath. He was another former Facebook executive. They've both been on the talk circuit recently, admitting that Facebook was designed to get users addicted. Talk to us about how all of that comes into play in Genesis and Exodus.
Sure. It toggles between the year 2040 and 2077. And in the year 2040, it focuses on this complete kind of like a technocrat, this guy Josiah Saunders. He's a complete scumbag. Think of he's one of the first trillionaires on the planet. He made all his money in gaming, online technology. He was, think of a Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, Gates, any one of those guys, Bezos. And he is, because it's sci-fi, even though it's in the future, it's dealing with a lot of themes that are current today. Like, fake news is a huge theme in this story. This guy, this character, is a complete scumbag. He owns a news agency that puts out fake news, but he actually has mercenaries or mercs that he hires as reporters, giving him real-time data from the Middle East and from Africa and from all over the world to give him real news. And only the elite can afford to pay people to get real news. And then he, in turn, spins it and puts out fake news that helps him, whether it's in the stock market or not, or the government can tell his company what he can and cannot put out. But he's also a transhumanist. He's obsessed with living forever. This deals with vaccines as well. This deals with, he's part of a Bilderberg-type group. He wants to he's completely vain as well. And so a lot of this stuff is current today. Transhumanism, Bilderberg group, vaccines, fake news, all these things that are current today, I put into this story and to show what would happen, what would the world look like a couple decades down the line and how bad it could be. And in the future, collecting data, metadata, is everything. This guy collects data on everything, whether it's a hair sample of someone he taps into his corporate enemy's sewer system to tap into their waste so we can analyze their waste to see what types of foods they're eating. So it's taking it to a whole nother level. And this technology, the way we have today, it's getting there quickly, but he uses it for evil. And then eventually there's a corporate takeover and assassination attempt, and this complete scumbag almost dies and then ends up being saved by someone he fired, who is a Christian, and he comes to know Christ and then therefore becomes a Moses to a lot of Christians in the world. He leads them out of the United States to a place where they can find safety. So it's almost like a what if in my mind. Like, you have a Bezos or a Gates or a Zuckerberg or a Elon Musk, and I'm rooting for these guys. If God could just turn one of these guys into a Christian, the amount of good they could do in the world. I'm not saying these guys are complete scumbags or anything. I don't know them. I don't know their hearts. But I'm just saying, if they were a devout Christian, not even just the money, but like their technology and their resources and the things they could do to change this world and spread the gospel. And so it was almost like a supposal, like a what if I, in the future, one of these types of people, you know, comes from the dark side and becomes a Christian and tries to help God's children and spread the gospel. And what could they do? And this guy is a trillionaire. And so he creates this underwater city, and he, it's like a Noah's Ark, and like a lot of like Christians from around the world flee there because of religious persecution. So in my mind, I'm like wargaming, you know, what would happen if someone like of that caliber were to become a Christian as well? And again, like I said, all the things that we're dealing with today, from vaccines to fake news to collecting metadata to government overreach to having government surveillance, drone strike, and you name it. And it's kind of in this book, but it's set in a futuristic setting.
What about your kids? Do you monitor how much time they spend on social media?
Yeah, I do. You know, once in a while if we're out and, you know, I'll let them watch something on TV, but I really monitor what they watch. I try to limit TV. I got to do better at it, but they're not on social media. My kids aren't old enough anyways, but even when they become older, I'm going to have a computer in like a common area for everyone. And it's amazing how kids are like a moth to a flame with a phone. My 2-year-old son is like, he grabs the phone and he opens up an app that has a game on it for him, and he knows exactly how to do it. It's scary. And it's just, I really think parents are going to have a hard time in the future trying to limit their kids' technology because it's so ingrained in our lives. And now because I'm an author, I would never be on social media were I not an author trying to promote my books and that sort of thing. So it's kind of this, now that I'm a business owner, I'm on it as well. But it's really making itself embedded in our culture that if you want to do anything, it involves technology and that technology. And it's very scary. I bought a 19 down here because I'm down in Virginia. You can buy old vehicles that aren't rusted. I bought a 1976 F-250, and I'm looking up on the internet how to do repairs on it. And I just pull up the most innocent thing, Mark. I'm like, all right, how to put, you know, redo a truck bed. And all of a sudden, there's like a half-naked woman on it. I'm like, I wasn't looking for a half-naked woman. I was trying to find out information about a truck. Like, no matter what you do on social media, I'm like, how are you going to protect your kids from this? I'm going to have to get special software or something.
Oh yeah. It's everywhere. I mean, it's half the links that you would click on Drudge. Half of those news sites have, you know, some very scantily clad people on the sidebar, and it's just the second I see that it's that, when I click the link, the second I see that I've gone to one's the Mirror, it's really bad. Another one is I can't remember them all, but a couple
Mark,
of the ones from the UK, and I just, the second I see that that's the site that I've clicked to, I just close the window out.
Yeah, I mean, you could pick the most innocent topic, like how to steam clean your carpet, and you'll get, like, smut. Or you go to Fox News, you scroll down the bottom, like you said, and there's smut there. It's like, you can't get away. It's so, I know there's software coming out now that I'm going to have to really educate myself on. I think Focus on the Family has something that you can put on your computer to help, but I'm going to really, really limit what my kids have access to. Currently, what they do now online would be if I put a YouTube video on of an old-fashioned cartoon or something like that, or VeggieTales or something simple like that. But I really want to watch very closely because the technology is changing so rapidly, and it is so dangerous, especially, I think, to young men out there. Because, like I said, you click on anything in a bikini-clad woman will pop up, and it's like it's an assault, I think, specifically for young men nowadays. I feel bad for them.
Yeah, and Christians, it's specifically an assault on Christians, because I think the devil's figured out that maybe a lot of them don't go looking for it, but it's a statistic that I quote often. It was Crosswalk Magazine did a they had a poll at a men's conference, and from that conference, and it was a big one. So they had a big population sample.
I think I've heard this.
50% of the pastors admitted to looking at porn in the past year, and the rest of the men, 50% admitted to looking at porn in the last week. And now, if you're looking at porn and you're a Christian, you're already lying to your wife. You're not telling her that what you're doing. So that's probably a pretty skewed number, 50%, because if you're willing to lie to your wife, why would you not be willing to lie at this conference? Why are you going to suddenly get honest then? And so it's the number is probably much, much higher for both of those categories, both for the pastors and the other Christian men. And and it's absolutely shocking. it's a cancer amongst Christianity, and you know, we've really become the church in America has become so complacent, and I think that's probably a big part of the reason why. That's the end of the first half of my interview with John Theo. Tune in next week for the rest of the show.
The Days of Elijah, Book 4, The Seventh Vial, by bestselling author Mark Goodwin, is now available in paperback, Kindle, and audio edition. The ultimate battle, which will decide the fate of heaven and earth, has finally come. Everett and Courtney Carroll have fared better than most through the past 7 years of the Great Tribulation, but the eve of Armageddon refuses to let them live out the last hours of this present age without conflict, trouble, and persistent peril. The Bible has prophesied of the seven vials of God's wrath, the final judgments which will utterly destroy what's left of a decimated planet. These calamities will bring a plague of festering boils upon the followers of the Antichrist. Rivers and seas will turn to blood, and a global earthquake will raise the cities of the earth to the ground. All of this in the midst of the war to end all wars. It won't be the first time they've been trapped between a rock and a hard place, but it might be the last. Don't miss the final chapter of this end times sensation. Get your copy from Amazon.com today.